Dot and Peter Mason have one of our new black signs on their lawn. Their sign says, "Whenever possible, be kind. It is always possible." Dot tells me her neighbor asked her where she got it. Kindness is indeed a compelling concept. A great deal in life is interconnected, much more than we usually think. We most fully notice and appreciate interconnectedness when we are paying attention to a particular thing. For example, my first point about kindness this morning will be based on a friend's email that contained a link. Who would think that such an all too common occurrence would illustrate both how kindness gets expressed and interconnections get noticed? Receiving an email with a link can present a dilemma, whether or not to open it. Is the sender a close friend or a casual acquaintance? How often does that sender send an email with a link? Is the email sent to you alone or to some broad laundry list of contacts? Kindness may be expressed by the decision to open or by the decision to ignore. Opening is an act of kindness when our first impulse is to ignore. Whatever the particulars of the sender, opening honors that person's bid for connectedness. More on that in a moment. Not opening can be an act of kindness to oneself, giving permission to avoid hours of potentially unsatisfactory, unsolicited screen time. In this particular case, the friend was a close friend and rarely sends links. So I opened it, and I eventually watched the TED Talk that she highly recommended. And here you have the interconnectedness that appears when one is paying attention. The TED Talk was by the American writer Anne Lamott. Her title was 12 Truths I Learned from Life and Writing. Because kindness was so much on my mind, I was struck by one thing she said, somewhat offhandedly, on her fourth truth, which was, "Everyone is broken." She said, "If you want people to write more warmly about them, they should have behaved better." The audience laughed, and so did I. But then I wondered, where's the kindness in that remark? Was it really funny? Not to make too much of it, let's just ask each ourselves the question, what would we like our biographer to write about us? My guess is that most, if not all of us, would like to have a mention that we were kind. What do our lives look like then when kindness is an important goal, what we UUs might very well call a spiritual practice? Maybe there's not much more to say, really, beyond the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. What kindnesses have been done unto you that you would do unto others? What kindnesses have been done unto you that you have done unto others? Actually, when I thought about it, we could end here with this one thought. After all, that's the central truth of most religions. But it's only page 3. Dr. John Gottman of the Gottman Institute in New York City has studied relationships, marital relationships, for several decades. He started in the 70s when the divorce rate shot up over 50%. He says, the more we receive or witness kindness, the more we will be kind ourselves, creating an up spiral, he calls it, of love and generosity that builds relationships. Perhaps the essential thing then is to notice. When we look for kindness, we will find it and we will practice it. Each of us may launch that up spiral of love and generosity. As did Jane, I relied on others to give me some good examples of kindness. And it became very clear that kindness takes many forms and has multiple contexts. My friend Brenda of the linked email wondered about the role of motivation. Similar to the question of, does anyone hear it if a tree falls in the forest? Is there noise? How often do we practice kindness when there's no one there to appreciate it? I'd like to think that when we're our best selves, the answer would be often. Author David Hamilton recounts the effect an act of kindness he witnessed had on him. He writes, "I was sitting in a coffee shop when I saw a young girl. She was probably about 19 or 20. She walked past a homeless man, paused for a second, and then walked away. She reappeared a few minutes later, carrying a brown bag with some food and what I thought was a hot drink. She handed it to the man, and they spoke for a few moments. Then she walked away. It was a beautiful act of kindness, unnoticed by most of the world, that really touched me. I felt uplifted, inspired even. For the rest of the day, I found myself making an extra effort to be helpful to people, family, friends, acquaintances, not just helping them, but giving them my full attention when they spoke and responding in ways that I thought would make them feel good about themselves. When I went to bed that night, I reflected on the day. Wasn't it amazing, I thought, how the young girl's act of kindness toward the homeless man had had a larger effect? This kind of thing happens every day. We just don't notice it. Acts of kindness lift the spirits of people who witness them, and they carry that kindness forward, lifting the spirits of others." That was the premise of Catherine Ryan Hyde's 1999 novel, Pay It Forward. I don't know if that novel remains popular today, but it was a good read. But the concept has certainly entered the culture. If I say pay it forward, most people in this room probably know what I mean. And it is an ideal that encourages us toward kindness and generosity. Then there is the special context of loving kindness. Back to Dr. Gottlieb and his studies of couple relationships. By now, he says, he is able to predict up to 94% accuracy whether a couple, straight or same-sex, will be happily together 6 years after they marry. A big part of the answer to that question is how each member reacts to the other's bids for connectedness. Back to that term. When one partner calls attention to a beautiful bird out the window, he says, that's a bid for connectedness, however small. The partner has an option. The partner can turn toward or turn away. Turning away might include anything from a perfunctory, how nice, to something stronger like, can't you see I'm reading right now? Turning away kills intimacy. I see people jogging their partners. I have done it myself, it's true. How often do we turn away from our partners or our friends' bids for connectedness? It is a question that is useful in thinking about how we build relationships, how we exercise kindness. Dr. Gottlieb suggests conceiving of kindness as a muscle that needs exercising, something that we practice, something that can wither and weaken if we are not attentive. It calls to mind our choices regarding our friends' email links, their bids for connectedness, and our impulse at times to turn away. What would it look like to be intentional about kindness when reading through emails or even sending them? Another particular context for kindness is in the presence of grief, the kindness of a community. I have a close friend with a family member who was just diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. She is from a large, close family, 11 brothers and sisters. Theirs is a community embracing the ill family member and supporting each other. Those of you who have known me for some time know that I lost my wife, Donna, to this terrible disease. The kindness of the South Church community was offered in so many ways, I cannot name them all. Dot Mason's early morning visits, bringing flowers from her garden, just leaving them on the steps so as not to disturb, for us to find as we started our day. Martha Peterson, who hardly knew us, coming by as a caring pastoral associate. Susan Trelevin, bringing gifts on drop-in visits. Voices from the heart singing at her memorial service. The many who hugged and greeted, sent cards, made calls, stopped by, dropped off food. It goes on and on. Kindness in the context of grief is balm for an open wound. That experience brings me back to the first context of kindness I mentioned, kindness to oneself. I have never heard it expressed more deeply and genuinely than Frank Clarkson's words as he led Donna's memorial service. Frank said, "I did not see Jim and Donna much after I learned about her diagnosis. I intended to, and I knew they had a steady stream of visitors. I kept them in my prayers, but I have to confess I was busy and I didn't show up like I could have. I tell you this," this is in the context of the memorial service, people sitting there, "I tell you this because I suspect that some of you may be thinking the same thing. I could have done more. If so, please hear me right now, at this moment. I ask you to let go of any regret you may have. Do not live with your regrets. They are only love's way of acknowledging that we can never do enough for those we love." Do not live with your regrets. How beautiful, how kind, how wise. We are all so human, each of us, uniquely imperfect. We love and we care, we stumble, we do our best, too often feeling it is not good enough. We sometimes chastise ourselves for real or perceived shortcomings. In truth, we would do better to celebrate our goodness, notice what is generous and kind, launch that upward spiral of love and generosity. I invite you once again to think about kindness as a muscle made stronger when exercised. Exercise isn't always easy, I can tell you that. Yet we are better for it. We can start with kindness for ourselves, and as in our story this morning, let that kindness radiate out into the world. Two quotes summarize succinctly the essentiality of kindness in our world and in our lives. I told you I reached out to people. First, my son Paul's favorite Kurt Vonnegut quote from the novel God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater. The eccentric Elliot Rosewater, weighed down by the intractability of the world, filled with needs, sorrow, pain, sadness, suffering, imagines what he might say to our newest arrivals. "Hello, babies. Welcome to Earth. It's hot in the summer and cold in the winter. It's round and wet and crowded. On the outside, babies, you got 100 years here. There's only one rule that I know of. You've got to be kind." Then we circle back to Anne Lamott. A little bit of practical advice. You can either practice being right or practice being kind. Let's practice being kind. Blessed be.